one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. It reminds us of all that once was good.
And the only church that truly feeds the soul day in, day out, is the Church of Baseball.
White Sox Weekly, presented by Miller Lite,
the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball.
The latest news and views from players,
coaches, and direct from the front office.
White Sox Weekly, on the proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball.
WLS.
AM 890.
Welcome into White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight, and we've got an hour here with you, the White Sox fan, keeping you updated on everything the Sox have been up to this offseason so far. And a lot of news coming out just in the last 24 hours or so. We will get you up to date. Here's kind of a rough schedule of events for the afternoon, short though it may be. We will talk with amateur scouting director Nick Hostetler right about 12:15 or so. Want to take a look in depth at the White Sox system. Talk a little bit about the seasons that were for some of the players that graduated into the big leagues. You know, we're talking about Tim Anderson and Omar Narvaez, both those guys making some impact at the major league level. And then talk about some of the guys that might be fighting for jobs come spring training. And a couple of guys who are going to be featured pretty heavily in, you know, White Sox prospect rankings and guys that you'll see on some of those lists throughout the course of the next season. We're also going to talk with Dan Hayes of CSNChicago.com in just a couple of minutes here on the show. And of course, if you're a White Sox fan and listening to the show, you've likely heard the news that the White Sox have shuffled the coaching staff around just a little bit. Of course, Rick Renteria was named the 40th manager in White Sox history just a couple of weeks ago. He replaces Robin Ventura. And that, in turn, opens up a vacancy on the coaching staff. Well, a couple of things have been moved around in order to fill that vacancy, and a couple of empty spots have been created. So let's get you up to date. The White Sox have named Joe McEwing their new bench coach. Joe, obviously, had been working as the third base coach for the White Sox over the past five seasons and has been in the organization for quite some time and is well-respected. He's a guy who gets a lot of credit for bringing Tim Anderson's defense along and really kind of connecting with some of the younger players and serving a developmental role there while serving also as the third base coach for the Chicago White Sox. So he stays in the coaching staff. Also moving around will be Nick Capra to take the third base coaching job for Joe McEwing. Nick had been working as the White Sox director of player development over the last 5 years. So that's a fairly important position that the White Sox will have to look to fill. Now, this is one that's being created, or an opening that's being created, because of moving a few guys around. Nick Capra had been in the organization for 22 years and over the last five seasons had served as the club's director of player development. Kurt Hassler, who had been working as an organizational pitching coordinator for the last four or five seasons, is now going to be the bullpen coach. Bobby Thigpen no longer the bullpen coach for the Chicago White Sox. Kurt Hassler is in and taking that spot. Daryl Boston, Don Cooper, Mark Salas, Greg Sparks, and Todd Steverson are all back. Of course, Daryl Boston, the first base coach of the White Sox. Don Cooper has been the pitching coach since 2002. Mark Salas works as the bullpen catcher. Greg Sparks, the assistant hitting coach, and a guy that Jose Abreu has said did a ton of work with him. And it gave a ton of help in getting Jose out of the slump that he was in for the first 2 months or so of the season. We saw Jose Abreu kind of return to the Jose Abreu that we're used to, that we've seen before. And he credited Craig Sparks, for a lot of that. Todd Steverson, the hitting coach, returning as well for a third season. So that's some of the big news here. And I think, you know, some of these are common sense changes, things that could have been expected from other places. Joe McEwing, especially, a valued member of that coaching staff, a guy that, you know, had gotten a couple interviews in other places for managerial jobs and just never quite gotten the nod. He's a guy who was likely considered to take Robin's spot had the White Sox not been proactive in bringing in Rick Renteria as a bullpen, or rather as a bench coach a year ago. Joe's a guy who I wouldn't be too surprised to see get a manager's job at some point in his coaching career. That said, moving in as the bench coach will certainly prepare him for that potential next step. Nick Capra, having worked as the director of player development and moving into a coaching role now, moves some experienced instructional ability into that spot as a third base coach. And we've seen, you know, Joe McEwing with that same kind of instructional ability benefit some White Sox players. I think it'll be really interesting to see exactly where and how the White Sox fill that void at director of player development. Certainly an important one, kind of sets the schedule for or helps and determines setting the schedule for when guys get called up, what kind of assignments they're going to have throughout the course of the minor leagues and in instructs and all that good stuff. We'll talk with Nick Hostetler, the amateur scouting director, a bit, and you'll get a sense of what those assignments kind of feel like throughout the course of a season. We'll talk with CSN Chicago's Dan Hayes in just a second, but first, I want to let you know that sports fans, the Bulls Sox Youth Academy, the official youth training facility of the Chicago Bulls and White Sox, runs year-round basketball, baseball, and fast-pitch softball sports programming for boys and girls ages 5 to 18. The Academy offers private lessons, camps, travel teams, birthday parties, field trips, and much, much more. Call 630-PLAY-BALL or visit BullsSoxAcademy.com for more information. All right, we head out to the phone lines right now and bring in Dan Hayes, CSNChicago.com. So, Dan, appreciate you joining the program here on White Sox Weekly, taking some time out for us on a Saturday. A couple of changes to the coaching staff. Joe McEwing goes to the bench coach role. What surprised you most, if anything, in some of these moves?
Maybe just that it doesn't say one way or the other what direction they're headed in. I mean, you look at the player development parts with Nick Capra and Kurt Hassler coming up, and those are guys that have been key player development guys for them for a long time. And you know, partly that signals, hey, maybe there's a youth movement coming. But at the same time, there's a lot of continuity with the last coaching staff. Joe McEwing going from third base to bench coach and keeping Todd Severson, keeping Don Cooper in place. It says, and obviously Rick Renteria too, coming over from bench coach. I mean, this is a staff that was here last year. And so it's a little bit, it's interesting. It doesn't say one way or the other what way they're going. I still think that, you know, Joe McEwing was not a shocker at all. You know, he's a guy that interviewed for a managerial position, in, I think, Houston a couple years back. And he's always been very highly thought of within the organization. So for him to come over, especially with a lot of the work that he's done on the defensive side, use of spray charts, you know, implementing defensive shifts the last couple of years, it doesn't surprise me at all that he is tabbed here just because how highly they think of him.
Something I was thinking about as we were just setting up the show, a position like director of player development, one that Nick Capra leaves to go be the third base coach for the White Sox. Do you know if you have to wait to talk to guys to fill those vacancies who may or may not be involved in playoff teams? Is that, you know, because I know you have to do that for some coaches. Is that a position where you have to wait?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't think it is just because they're not involved in the managerial staff. Potentially because they're going through instructional league right now, that's a possibility. But, I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, because Nick Hostetler was a guy who was in that organization for a while, but came over and actually worked with Capra with the Braves organization before taking his role as the director of amateur scouting. Sox had a great 2016 draft. A lot of people have said so, not just the organization, which is always nice. And I think, you know, as we've seen some of that youth movement, Nick himself has kind of talked about, you know, learning, you know, not liking the numbers, the stats when he first started and understanding that that's a huge part, an integral part of that job now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that when Rick Hahn talked about it at the press conference with Rick Renteria, he talked about open-mindedness. And I think he was addressing the statistical information side. I think that that's a way they'd like to really go. We saw it with the defensive shifts a couple of years ago heavily. I think 2013, they really put them into place. It wouldn't surprise me if this is even more so doing that with this staff. Like I said, Joe McEwing really took to it. They ran wild with defensive shifts, and obviously it's something that they like, that side of things. So that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Taking a look at the coaches that are staying, Todd Severson and Greg Sparks stay as hitting coach and assistant hitting coach. I remember Jose Abreu gave a lot of credit to Greg Sparks for helping him get out of that hole. Todd Severson is, check me if I'm wrong, the only coach on this staff that was brought in from the outside and didn't have a lot of previous experience or previous working experience with the White Sox.
Yeah, at this point, I think that, you know, and obviously Greg Sparks being his protege or being his actually his mentor with the A's. Those two are the guys that are from the outside. Everybody else, you know, Joe McEwen had a lot of minor league time with the White Sox, and obviously Don Cooper's been around for a while. So yeah, Todd Severson, they brought him in. I know some people were thinking there might be wholesale changes on the coaching staff, but I think that they want continuity in the message and the style, and for that to carry throughout the organization. So it doesn't surprise me with them kind of doubling down and bringing in Sparks last year that they like a lot of what's going on there.
So as we let you go here, Dan, I'm getting the sense that while these changes are important and signal some kind of change, at least in some organizational philosophy, and there should be some, as Rick Hahn has kind of said, we're not happy. We underachieved this year. But not a lot of tea leaves necessarily to be read about the future, the direction the White Sox will take this winter.
No, they've been pretty vague about that, and it's understandable.
I mean,
when you have the pieces that they have, you don't go out and say, we're going to rebuild and build up expectations of that, and then it doesn't happen, and people are disappointed. I get that, you know, but it's going to be an interesting couple weeks, especially once November kicks into gear, just to see. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially with the teams that lost early on in the postseason, the Red Sox and Red Sox and Rangers being teams that were reportedly heavy after Chris Sale, and both of them kind of falling out because of starting pitching. It wouldn't surprise me if those teams put on a little pressure and tried to do their best to acquire a Chris Sale type or Jose Quintana. I still think the White Sox, I think they have an idea where they want to go for sure. But at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if the market, you know, they've kept the door open to either side. And who knows if a team came in and blew them away for one of those guys, whether or not they'd move to kind of fill some of the holes that they have with a young, strong talent that's major league ready.
Dan, appreciate it as always. We'll let you get back to the beach, but we will likely call you as those moves get made. And so keep the phone by you when you're there on the Adirondack. If you want to stay up to date on all things White Sox this offseason, be sure to follow the team on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat for all things White Sox related, like Sox Fest, on sale dates, and more. We'll be back here on White Sox Weekly. We'll talk to the amateur scouting director for the Chicago White Sox, Nick Hostetler. That's next on White Sox Weekly. You've got WLS AM 890. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. Thanks for being with us here on a lovely Saturday afternoon. We'll get things going with our first guest of the afternoon in just a second. Right now, I want to tell you that if you want to stay up to date on all things White Sox this offseason, be sure to follow the team on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and Snapchat for all things White Sox related, like Sox Fest, on sale dates, and more. And of course, we'll keep you up to date with everything the White Sox are doing here on White Sox Weekly. We'll head out to the phone lines right now and bring in our first guest of the afternoon. Nick Hostetler, amateur scouting director for the Chicago White Sox, joins us here on White Sox Weekly. Nick, been a minute. Great to talk to you, and thanks for taking some time out of your day for us.
Yeah, thanks, Connor. I appreciate it.
So, want to get started with a couple of different things here. You know, as this offseason kind of kicks up, some fans who, you know, maybe are glued into the playoffs, which have been good, they kind of miss the fact that the Arizona Fall League is going on right now, and it goes up until the third week of November. Want to ask some questions about the Fall League and, of course, about the White Sox prospects and their 2016 seasons. What is the AFL from an organizational's perspective or an organization's perspective? How do you guys see it as an opportunity for young players? And how do you go about selecting rosters for this? There's got to be a lot of communication between teams because it's like five that come together to create one team.
Yeah, it's a the player development director and of all the teams will kind of submit their names to the general manager of the club, ours being the Glendale Club. And they put together the rosters. They have things called priority guys where those guys will get X amount of playing time, more opportunities, more situations to play in through the course of the season, just to give them a better opportunity to evaluate their own players. There's guys that are taxi squad guys that are they play Wednesday and Saturdays. Those guys will only play those 2 days unless there's an emergency or an injury or some sort. Sure. But they primarily play those 2 days. So there's a lot of different little bits and pieces of the Fall League to put those roster together that become a little bit difficult. But at the same time, I know for us, it's an opportunity for our better prospects at the higher level that we think can handle it. Most guys are, you know, double A, high A, double A type guys that can handle that that type of competition. It is very good competition. I've been out here and I've watched the last 2 days, and I have a couple more days to go to watch on this trip. And the level of competition is very high. The arms are very good. There's been a lot of runs scored in the first two games. Sure. Luckily, I think only one White Sox pitcher has thrown in that time, and that was Brian Clark, and he threw very well. So, but the overall talent wise of the Arizona Fall League is very high. It's fun to watch. It's fun to see the names that you read about in the publications and when trades are rumored. It's fun to get to lay eyes on those guys in this type of environment.
Yeah, looking through the rosters for all these combined teams, it's a who's who of teams' top prospects, really. None of them born in the 1980s, all of them in the 1990s, which makes me feel terribly old, and I'm sure a lot of
you
fans
and me
too.
Both.
Good Lord. I mean, there's a kid born in 95 on this roster.
Yeah.
I mean, good God.
It's tough to look at.
It really is. It's debilitating almost. For White Sox fans who aren't familiar, you will be familiar with a number of names. I'll just run through them real quickly. Zach Collins, Courtney Hawkins, Danny Hayes, Trey Miachavsky, Nolan Sandburn, Louis Leachich, I think is how he pronounces his last name, Brian Clark, and go ahead.
Yeah, no, Louis Leachich.
Leachich.
He was a draft we took out of University of San Diego as a hitter. That just didn't come as we expected it to, and he pitched as well at USD, and we had seen him pitch, and I actually saw him pitch in the Cape Cod Summer League the year before his draft year, and whenever the bat didn't work, we threw him on the mound, and he really excelled. He's got a chance to be a left-handed guy out of the bullpen for us in the future.
So when we look at the Arizona Fall League as fans, as kind of outside the organization, like you've got, you know, such interior knowledge of these players and of your organization, what should we look for? I remember talking with Steve Stone a little bit earlier in the season, just kind of asking about the Arizona Fall League and trying to get acclimated with it. You know, he mentioned that the hitters are still as top tier as ever that go down to Arizona for the Fall League, but the pitchers maybe not so. Like maybe those top arms aren't going down to the Fall League. You think that's true?
Yeah, it is. A lot of it now is managing innings throughout the season.
Sure.
You know, just in our case, Carson Fulmer, who would have been probably a prime candidate to go to the Fall League, he had just reached an innings limit for us that. If you start extending those kids past that, there's all the data and research that is done is X amount of innings and guys start breaking down and whatnot. So we try to keep those guys under that inning limit, and all of baseball does. So the top tier, there's still a few of these guys, the big time high profile pitching prospects that are here. But for the most part, there's more quantity of the hitters, the high ceiling, high impact hitters than there are pitchers here.
What do you send a prospect down to the Arizona Fall League with? Because I know at times, you know, I've worked in the minors just a little bit, so I know some of it. You know, you might tell a guy to not swing at the first pitch for 2 weeks. Like that might be a job assignment for a young kid or for a pitcher. You know, take the slider and put it away, something like that for a little while. Do you send guys to the Fall League with similar type checklists, or is this more a take the kids' gloves off and let's go at it, let's play?
Yeah, probably the latter. The first part of your question with the direction, the plan, the situations that they'll hit in, we usually save that for our instructional league, which is going on now as well. So we're able to see both the instructional league in the morning, Arizona Fall League in the afternoon or evening. And so it worked out really well for us in the organization to see both. But most guys with the Fall League, they've evolved past those that development plan. They're at a point now where it's time to test them. It's time to see how they are against the better players, against the better arms, against the better hitters, to where we can then see what role, because these guys are very close to the big leagues. Anymore, seems like guys are jumping straight from Double A to the big leagues.
Yeah.
So these guys are very, very close to the big leagues. So when Rick's down here, or Kenny, or myself, or whoever it is, we're looking for things that we see out of our guys that could fit in Chicago, to where the instructional league is more, hey, this first week you're going to do nothing but hit with a two-strike approach. Then that way it's, you know, there's not stats or wins, losses in the instructional league, but there is in the Arizona Fall League.
I talk about
so
Nick.
My
bad, Nick. Go ahead.
No. We just kind of keep it. Here we just kind of keep it for those guys in the Fall League. Very simple.
I got you. Talking with Nick Hostetler, amateur scouting director for the Chicago White Sox. Want to get into a bit of what we saw this season. And I know some of this crosses into your direct realm of control, and some of it's a little bit outside, but we'll meld it together, I guess, for the show. Let's talk about a couple of prospects that White Sox fans saw at the major league level, saw graduated here. I think, you know, looking back to when the White Sox first got their hands on guys like Tim Anderson and Omar Narvaez, they were two very different guys as far as ceiling, I would imagine, is concerned. And I think with Tim specifically, there were questions about his defense very early on, and those questions became less and less and less as the years went on and on and on. He's really matured into a complete shortstop defensively.
He has, and it was. When we saw him at East Central Junior College, I think mine was upwards of three or four times that I ended up seeing him that year. Each time, my reasoning to go back wasn't the offense, it was the defense, and it was to make sure I felt comfortable enough that he could stay at shortstop. And I think we reached a point where we were so high on him offensively that even if we didn't feel like he was going to stay at shortstop and had to move to center field, we were probably still going to take Tim, just because we felt the offensive profile was so high. But as he's developed in the time and the work that he's put in with our PD guys to refine the defense and to go out there and do it on the biggest stage, I mean, it was extremely impressive. It says a lot about the kid. It says a lot about his work ethic and makeup, but he's such a tremendous athlete that when you have a guy that's that athletically gifted, things just tend to come. And they just, you bank on those, you bet on those. And when he gets up there into the big leagues and he's making plays in the hole and he's making throws from, I mean, short left field, it's like, wow, you know, he can do this. And he's a cornerstone for us for the future.
Honest to God, one of my favorite things to watch this season was Tim going first to third or second to home.
He is some kind of athlete.
Good Lord.
It is a glide and a smooth. And, you know, and I think it's something that I've incorporated with our amateur scouts. He was a basketball player.
Yeah.
And I think the game of basketball is an unbelievable resource for us with players, just from if they have that history with their footwork and what goes into the basketball's quick feet, quick twitch muscles, those things translate to the baseball field.
For Omar, you know, he kind of grew beyond his years this year. White Sox catchers as a whole, to be frank, I think you've probably seen this too, suffered a little from the pitch framing, especially toward the bottom of the zone, as some of the pitch framing numbers kind of come out. Is that an area Omar can work on specifically, or does that develop over the course of time?
No, I think he can. He's another kid. He's very gifted, and the fact that he has a drive about him that it's what's got him to this point. Because I don't think at any point, and if anybody did, that they sat there and watched and anticipated him in the minor leagues to do what he did when he came up to the big leagues. So I think offensively for sure. And I think the defense of the pitch framing, and like you said, the bottom of the zone is something that we are actually, I was with John Orton the other day, our catching instructor down here, he's stressing with our young catchers in the instructional league. And they spent a good hour on it the other day of just teaching those guys how to position their feet, inch a little bit closer to the plate, just do little things that will help that. And I think once Omar gets to spring training, I think there's going to be a slight improvement on that, and I think he can get better at that rather quickly.
Talking with Nick Hostetler, the amateur scouting director for the White Sox. Nick, what is, from your domain, from the things that are most directly under your control, what's a successful season for you?
For me, in terms of draft wise, or in terms of how these players do after we draft,
yeah, because I imagine it's got to be tough for you to separate the two, Ryan.
It is very hard. It is your mind. You know, right now, I am. You know, I'm seeing our guys. I'm seeing the guys we just drafted, and quite frankly, I would be lying if I told you I wasn't extremely excited about this group that's down here in Instructional League and watching these guys and them, their development, these hitters that have a plan, good, solid baseball players or pitchers are throwing strikes. We've got three or four guys from this year's draft that have a chance to be middle to high rotation guys in the big league. So I'm very excited about that. At the same time, you got to flip that switch and all of our guys, including myself tomorrow, I'm flying across country to go watch a high school event in Florida. So your mind switches so much back and forth, and you don't want to rely and just base it solely off of a successful year in 16, because 17 then becomes so much more important to build on that. You know, for me, it is a very intense time, usually from the months of January until June, where I'm doing nothing but focusing on amateur players. And at times, I can't tell you if the big league team has won and lost just because of travel schedules and, you know, trying to get pitching rotations in this college and this high school. So, you know, and I'm trying to, you know, manage a 29-man staff, and it just, there's not enough hours in the day. But then once those guys are signed and once those guys are get out, you try not to live and die with every box score, but you do. It's human nature. And, you know, we'll sit there and I'll get a text message from one of my cross checkers. It'll be like, hey, Collins just hit a home run. And then it's like, you try not to live on every single at bat, but you do. And so then that mold, what for me at least, as soon as June's over and we get these players signed out, we start preparation for the next year for the players. But I really focus on that draft class and trying to pick apart that class to see if where we can improve the following year, what mistakes maybe we made in the draft, or what certain trends or scenarios that have come up through that draft that we could be better prepared for next year. So it's just that constant cycle. And I'll say this, and this is coming into my second year, so maybe it's maybe I'm a little naive to it, but it's a really exciting process for sure.
And that's a process that continues all year round for you, Nick, and for the White Sox in general. We'll get back to you just after the news. We'll continue our conversation because it's a good one. We've got more to do. We'll get more into some specific players in the White Sox system and exactly who fans can get excited about, maybe getting a job opportunity come spring training in a couple of months. You can live out your dream of becoming a professional baseball player by attending the White Sox Dodgers Fantasy Camp January 15th through the 21st at the spring training home of the White Sox and Dodgers at Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona. For more information, call the Fantasy Camp hotline at 623-302-5078. We'll give you that number again, 623-302-5078. You can also sign up by going to whitesox.com and just clicking on Fantasy Camp. We got to get you to the 12:30 news in just a second here. And when we come back on the other side of the news, we will continue our conversation with amateur scouting director Nick Hostetler of the Chicago White Sox. You've got White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. So welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight, and we are continuing our conversation with White Sox amateur scouting director Nick Hostetler here on the show. I want to tell you first that the most popular way to follow White Sox baseball is with MLB.com at bat. It's the number one app for live baseball. You get to enjoy live look-ins and highlights, game day, scores, StatCast, live radio broadcast, the whole shebang. It is a fantastic app. You can get MLB.com at bat on your favorite devices right now. Get yourself out there. So in continuing our conversation with Nick Hostetler, I want to get to more of the overall, Nick, look at the system, how the system ranks, how other people are looking at it. And I'm sure you're aware of how others appraise what the White Sox have internally. Every organization is aware of it. It would be stupid not to be. You got to know where everybody's, you know, ranking and doing, and it helps you, I'm sure. Everybody that got drafted this past season, 2016, for the White Sox is, well, everybody, the top three, top four, top five guys that got drafted, they're all in that top 10, top 15 range by everybody who ranks them. Is that a good thing?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and it's one of the things that, quite frankly, we haven't seen around here in a while. And to get some positive notoriety for our system, for our drafts, I think is a direct reflection of the hard work, the effort, and the time that's spent on this. And I know that, you know, when I took over last August, there were some things that I wanted to do differently from a department standpoint, but also stuff that Rick and I spoke about that we wanted to do differently from an organizational standpoint. We put that plan into action, and we feel very confident in the results from this past draft. And I think it just it solidifies and maybe justifies what you did was right. And, you know, it's hard not to listen to outside noise. And you can sit here and I can sit here and tell you, oh, I don't look at it. It doesn't bug me. It does. Right. And I look at it. And I think you would be in the organization a disservice as well as yourself if you don't reflect and if you don't look at those things and listen to outside opinions. Because if you're going to live in a shell and you're going to live in a bubble, you're not going to get any better. So I look at it. I review it. I look what other organizations say. I look what publications say, the outside media says, our media says. And to me, you know, you try not to get too high with it, you try not to get too low, but it does matter. And it's a part that, you know, that's the only voice that our fans are hearing as well. Mm-hmm. And they're not hearing it from me. They're not, you know, and I'm going to be biased. You know, we just took these players. So for me to somebody to ask me a week after the draft, you know, how is the draft? You're never going to hear me say, boy, we didn't like the guy we took. You know, so it's one of the things that, you know, that's what our fans hear are these publications and rankings and services. So, yeah, it's nice to hear that there was a positive hear and read multiple places that felt it was a very positive draft and it's helped our system and organization.
Yeah, the day a guy in your shoes goes, yeah, we really got shoehorned into our 10th overall pick.
Exactly.
Probably when you want to pull the plug on that.
There's a good chance that I wouldn't be leaving Chicago with a job if I said that right after.
Your final public comments. Thanks for coming through town. Wanted to ask you about, because I think White Sox fans are well aware of Zach Collins and are waiting with bated breath and pretty ridiculously high on the kid. I am too. I've seen some stuff. I can't wait to get down to the Fall League and see him and a couple other guys. But I wanted to ask you about a guy that got drafted this season that's getting a little heat around him from White Sox fans who follow the system pretty intently from other places too. I don't know if you've got a guess in your head as to where I'm going here. It's a position player. What's up with Alex Call and how has his 2016 gone? And tell me about this heat.
Well, I'll say this. Alex Call, Jameson Fisher, those two guys, our third and fourth round pick, including Zach Collins, was a direct reflection of the change that we wanted to make in our draft process. We wanted to get just good, solid baseball players, high on base guys, guys that understand discipline, plate coverage, but at the same time have tools. And Alex Call fit that to a T. He's a very detailed kid. He's graduated in three years from Ball State with a biology degree. He's very intelligent, but he's a hard-nosed grinder type player. He's playing center field. I've watched him the last 3 days down here, saw him during the season in Kannapolis as well. Defensively first, he's going to be a center fielder in the big leagues. He can run. He goes gap to gap well. He's got a plus arm, throws the ball extremely well. And then the key in what everybody's focusing on is the offense, and the numbers fit this kid. He is a line drive, doubles, machine, gets on base, understands the plate coverage discipline. And, you know, I kind of reference this to Zach Collins right after the draft, but Alex calls the same way. If there's a called strike on him, you almost think the umpire missed it because these guys are so good at understanding the strike zone. And he is one of them. He tested very high on all of our tests that we gave him. There were tap tests and eye tests and everything that we do prior to the draft. And for us, the stars aligned with him and we were able to get him. We're extremely high on Alex Call. We think that with Alex Call, Jameson Fisher, Aaron Schnurbusch, those three outfielders from this draft, they all have a really legitimate chance to be in Chicago and in Chicago, not not too distant future.
It makes me think of a story I heard about an umpire apologizing to Joey Votto for calling him out on a third strike. Joey, yeah, that's on me.
Yeah, I watched Zach Collins yesterday in the Fall League game. He caught extremely well, and at the plate, he took a strike on the outer half, and the umpire called it a strike, and he kind of looked back at him, and Rick Hahn is down here, and Rick looked at me, and he goes, I think the umpire knows he missed that one.
Yeah.
You know, it just they have that presence about them, and these kids get it.
Last one for you here as we wrap things up, Nick, and I really appreciate you hopping on the show. Always good to talk to you, and great information from you. And maybe this one should have gotten asked up at the top, but how are, you know, now that we've seen StatCast kind of come through and even the stuff that we don't see as baseball consumers and that you guys get in the organization, how has that data and those kind of measurements affected the way you guys are able to scout and how you're melding some of that information into, you know, whether that's cross-checking, whether that's double-checking, whether it's, you know, confirming a bias or however you want to put it. How able are you to get that stuff to a guy like Zach Collins who came out of Miami versus a guy who comes out of a junior college in Missoula, Montana?
Yeah, we have and we have actually just recently added to our analytics department, added another guy that is going to be just a tremendous asset for not only myself, but for Rick and the big league staff as well. But we have progressively and been very aggressive with getting more of the analytics involved, more of the profile, statistical profiles on these kids prior to their draft. I would say up until probably about 2 or 3 years ago, it wasn't a high priority for us to use. It is now. It is, and I liken it to a pizza. If I'm not going to say any pizza company's names in Chicago because I don't know who your guys' sponsors are. So
yeah, thank you. We appreciate anybody. That.
But it's like, you know, if I sold you a pizza, and you bought the pizza and there was a piece missing, and you're going to ask why. It's the same way with I do to Rick and Jerry. If I sell them a player and tell them this is a player we're going to buy, they want every piece of that puzzle, every piece of that pizza in there if they're going to buy it. And that's where I think we needed to improve in the amateur scouting department, and we have. This year is a direct reflection of that. And these guys all were very high statistically on all of our profiles. We have five different guys that run these constant profiles on all of the statistical performances. I get weekly updates, weekend updates, daily updates of all these guys. And I mean, at first, and I'll be honest with you and all the listeners, I had to have it color coded because it was a little much for me.
I bet.
I'm like, hey, look, can you put red is bad and green is good for me? Like, because to try to comprehend all of this was so much. These guys are so intelligent. They're so smart that it's easy for them to read it. Mm. And vice versa, if they're going to go out and scout a player, they would have a difficult time of doing that. So we needed to teach each other, and we have done that. I'm extremely excited about the analytic process that we use to do that. They have so many different formulas where they weight conferences and ballparks. I mean, they know dimensions of ballparks and how the home runs and ball travels and hits that this ballpark is normally compared to this ballpark. And it is such a complex system and process that I don't think I could ever wrap my head around it to understand exactly what they do. But I know when we marry the two together, I think the 2016 draft has shown, I'm very, very confident 17-18, as long as we keep doing this, is going to show as well that it works and it's very successful. And I'm excited as can be about having these guys on staff and provide more information for us.
Nick, really appreciate you coming on. Thanks as always for the talk. And remember, a beggar's pizza, which is the official pizza
there
of the White
go,
Sox.
Beggars. That's it.
They will never sell you a pie without a missing slice. Never do that to you. Nick, thanks a ton, man. Hopefully we'll see you in Phoenix.
That sounds great. Thanks so much.
That's Nick Hostetler, the White Sox amateur scouting director, joining us here on White Sox Weekly. We'll certainly thank him for his time. I feel like we'll probably check in with Nick a time or two more throughout the course of the offseason to check how things went in the Arizona Fall League. That wraps up in about the third week of November, and a lot of prime White Sox players are there. When we get back, I should tell you, If you missed the interview or tuned in a, you know, kind of midway through or whatever, or just want to relive it in all of its glory, you can do it over on WLSAM.com/White Sox. All the interviews we do here on White Sox Weekly and the show in its entirety actually is all podcast there on the site. So if you miss it or just want to relive it, head over to the website, WLSAM.com/White Sox, and you can find everything there. Also there is a column that I humbly submit to you every week. And in the show and in the column over the next handful of weeks, we're going to be taking a look positionally at the White Sox, what they have, what they're looking for, the potential for change over the course of this offseason. And we started it up with the catching position. It's up there in the column. We'll talk about what the White Sox have behind the dish when we come back from a quick break. I want to tell you first, though, that SoxFest 2017 returns on January 27th and runs through the January 29th. We're bringing ballpark fun to the Hilton Chicago. You'll score an autograph or photo with current players, coaches, and White Sox greats. Your favorite areas are back, too, with interactive space to play games, win prizes, and shop for team gear. It'll be a weekend of White Sox baseball you won't want to miss. Hotel packages are available now. Visit whitesox.com/SoxFest for tickets and more information. So we take our romp through the White Sox catching position next. Keep it right here. You got White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890. Welcome back into White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We just wrapped up a conversation with White Sox amateur scouting director Nick Hostetler. I want to touch on a couple of things he mentioned before we get into kind of the bulk, the meat of the show, taking a look at the White Sox from the catching perspective for the, well, from the 2016 season and into the 2017 season. You can, by the way, find that interview with Nick Hostetler on WLSAM.com/White Sox. All the interviews from White Sox Weekly get podcast up there. So in case you tuned in late, want to catch the whole thing, that's how you do it. Head over to the website, WLSAM.com/White Sox. One of the last questions I asked Nick was about advanced scouting. I should say advanced metrics in scouting. I've been fascinated by, and I know not everybody is, but I've been fascinated by the StatCast stuff, batted ball velocities and launch angles and all that jazz throughout the course of these playoffs. You know, we see it more often. Even in the season, we saw a lot of stuff. If you consume some of your baseball on Twitter or on some of the advanced media, you find these things published pretty often, whether it's the launch angle on a Giancarlo Stanton homer, you know, being like 9 degrees, being ridiculously low and incredibly hard, just kind of the enormity with which he hits home runs, or some of the lofted balls, some of the bigger, higher pop-up fly balls that have gone in this season. It's been fun to watch. And one of the things that's the reason I asked Nick about it is because that information and those profiles, like Nick was talking about, those scouting profiles, taking those batted balls from prospects and finding out, okay, how many times did he hit a ball that looks like this? And in that instance, this is a home run. Our typical home runs hit in Major League ballparks. They can, and I've seen this in a couple of different places. I think HardballTimes.com did a profile on it, and I think Fangraphs had one too. You know, they took a look at batted balls that had a consistent, you know, a width of launch angle and a range of exit velocity that are almost always home runs, and or at least fall for hits or are line drives. And you can do that for different sort of batted ball profiles throughout the, you know, range of launch angle and velocity. And in theory, then, if you're finding a guy who consistently produces this kind of angle and this kind of velocity, then those should fall for hits. And I'm not presenting this in a way, and I think Nick did a great job of backing this up too. I'm not presenting this in a way that would completely take over the scout. I think that's one of the biggest fallacies that you kind of hear still tossed around sometimes by baseball guys or people who were anti-number or whatever. I get that. I understand it. No one is trying to, front offices, and I shouldn't say no one, front offices, baseball as a whole, is not trying to completely do away with the flesh and blood scout, with the eyes and ears and noses and senses and grit and grime of the scout that goes out there and watches these players. They're just trying to take that approach
most front offices are trying to take that that approach and meld it with some of the advanced stats as a sort of cross-check. And it works both ways, too. And it works both ways. Ed and DJ say it all the time. You know, I get the numbers. Okay, I understand it. But none of those numbers are ever going to tell you, and this is what Ed and DJ say, none of those numbers are going to tell you what's in a guy's chest, how hard his heart beats, and how much he wants to win. And certainly, that's a valuable thing. You know, sometimes guys like that get drafted and they get weeded out by the minor league process to begin with. I would imagine that it's real tough to get to the big leagues if your heart, the metaphorical one and the actual physical one, isn't in the game, right? But, you know, you do see it every once in a while. Guys who will shy away from things or don't rise to the occasion, that kind of thing. Guys who would rather the spotlight fall on someone else, maybe the best way to put it. That said, the metrics and the scouting, I think, are an integral part of a pair as to how the White Sox front office is now going about its business in drafting players. And you heard it there from Nick Hostetler some, and I think that's by and large a reason why, or a help when it comes to ranking some of the drafts that happened in 2016. The White Sox are up there as one of the more successful ones, one of the ones that's thought of as a pretty darn good acquisition of talent. And I think that starts, perhaps, with the first pick they took in that draft, though there are others who are rising through the big leagues. I would be real surprised if a guy like Zach Birdie, their second overall pick, doesn't throw in a White Sox uniform at the big league level at some point in the 2017 season. But the guy who has a lot of people fixated on him, and certainly, you know, as the White Sox have a lot of pitching, are looking for bats, is Zach Collins. And we started this whole show this afternoon talking about the White Sox catchers, exactly what we saw in 2016 and how each position, we'll do this, you know, throughout the offseason, how we think each position could improve, could change, and could be altered throughout the course of the winter. But Zach Collins is a guy who may make his ascension into the big leagues quicker than most, but as a catcher, it takes some time to get that salt and seasoning. You know, I mean, defensively, Collins is regarded as, and everyone I've talked to in the White Sox organization, and it makes sense. You know, you don't draft a guy as high and speak of him as highly as the White Sox have of Zach Collins if you don't fully believe that he's going to stay behind the plate. But it's a challenge. I mean, that defensive spot is a challenge. I heard the same thing many years ago in the 2008, I think, in the Carolina League. Maybe it was 09. Tyler Flowers and Matt Wieters were both there in the Carolina League. And since they're both giants, you know, 6'4 and 230, everyone loved the bats of both of those players at that time. But a lot of people